Management is hard. At its core, it's getting other people to do things, things they may not want to do. And many organisations make this hard job more difficult by getting the wrong people to do it. If you work in a reasonably large workplace, you'll know there are managers who aren't very good. And the really unfortunate thing is that many of them used to be really good at something else. But they've been promoted to a level at which they're not competent. This is called the Peter Principle, and Kelly Hsu, who's a professor of finance in the Yale School of Management, and her colleagues have been looking at it.
The Peter Principle is the idea that firms and institutions tend to promote the worker who is doing the best at the current job into management positions. And this can create a problem because managerial positions usually require a different set of skills than worker-level positions. The Peter Principle is also about this problem that we observe that people tend to be promoted to their level of incompetence. Workers that are good at their jobs are quickly promoted to a position that they're not well suited for.
I'm glad you said that because I think that's the short version that's commonly heard, that people are promoted to their level of incompetence. It's such a pithy phrase. But why does it happen? Why are good performers in one domain promoted into management?
Well, I think the Peter Principle actually arises because firms want to do the fair thing. They want to create a meritocracy where they reward highly productive workers. And that type of promotion scheme actually incentivizes their workers to work really hard at their current jobs. So I think that's why firms engage in these types of promotion policies.
And you can see, I suppose, why people take those promotions, because if that's how you're going to be rewarded with more pay and perhaps more prestige, there's a rational reason to say yes, isn't there?
Oh, absolutely. So a worker, when offered a promotion, should usually want to take that promotion. It comes with higher status. It comes with higher pay. So it totally makes sense for a worker to want to take a promotion.
Now, we have been talking about it, the Peter Principle. It's a principle, but you've actually examined whether it's occurring in practice. What did you do?
Right. The Peter Principle is an old idea, but it hasn't been tested with a lot of data yet. So what I and my co-authors did is we examined promotion and productivity data from many firms across the U.S., and we found two main things. First, these firms overwhelmingly do promote the top sales workers into management positions. And second, once a worker is promoted into management, that worker is no longer engaged in frontline sales. Instead, the manager coordinates sales activities. And those who used to be very good at sales were actually worse managers in that they made their teams less effective at sales.
So hang on, the best salespeople turn out to be the worst managers of other salespeople?
I wouldn't quite say the worst managers, but they tend to be less effective managers than other people who were actually worse at sales.
Why did you look at salespeople, Kelly?
Partly because sales is the canonical example of where there might be a Peter Principle problem. So we looked at this data partly because the firms that we were studying, they often complain about having a Peter Principle problem. So it's not as though these firms are completely unaware that this might be a problematic promotion policy. They've always suspected that they have this problem.
I suppose the other thing too is that in sales, it's a relatively easy thing to identify the highest performers. There's a number.
Exactly. So lots of companies have make sales somewhat public among their employees. So it's very obvious who is among the top salespeople.
Were you able to measure the effect of the decline in performance of a manager's subordinates after the promotion?
So we found that a doubling of a new manager's pre-promotion sales. So that's suppose you had you see a manager who used to be twice as good as someone else. That manager is actually associated with a 7.5% decline in the sales performance of each of the new manager's subordinates.
That's enormous, isn't it? We're talking about a star salesperson, then becomes the manager, and it has a very measurable impact on their subordinates.
Yes, it was a bit surprising to us as well. While we can't say exactly why this occurs from the data, something suggestive that we find is it's really the lone wolf star salesmen that tend to be less effective managers. So the lone wolves are the salespeople that primarily engage in solo sales. So they have less experience working with a large team on complex products. And these people tend to be, on average, worse managers, even though they were very good at individual solo sales.
So I suppose the other side of that, that there are some salespeople who work more as part of a team, and if they're very good and they become managers, they're better managers.
Yes, so we do find that salespeople who have a lot of teamwork experience, now that could be experience directly dealing with people or just dealing with complexity because they've worked with many people on complex large sales, those people tend to be the most effective managers.
All right. Well, that sounds fairly compelling, those numbers. How can organizations avoid this? Because you've established it happens. It surprises, I think, nobody listening now that it happens. But how can different organizations and companies avoid doing this?
There are a number of potential solutions. None of them are perfect, and they're all rather expensive. So one thing that we find in the data is the Peter Principle is much less of a problem in firms that award a lot of pay for performance. So pay for performance means that these firms just give higher compensation to workers that are very productive instead of rewarding them with a promotion. So that can mitigate the Peter Principle, but having very strong pay for performance can itself be rather expensive.
That makes sense, because what that means is that somebody who's good at sales is probably happy to stay in sales. You can imagine, in fact, being the star salesperson and earning more than your boss because you're doing so well.
Exactly. So we have heard of various examples in which some star salespeople actually turn down promotion offers because they expect to make more in their current position due to their particular compensation scheme.
What other approaches are there to, I suppose, disconnecting the sort of star performer in one domain to becoming the manager?
So some technology companies have also developed dual career tracks. You can imagine the Peter Principle often applying to technology companies because the best engineers may not be the best managers of engineers. So what these technology companies do is they reward their top engineers with titles to acknowledge their contributions to the firm, but without moving them into a managerial role. And this accomplishes something that goes beyond pay for performance. The problem with just giving someone more compensation is that person can't really put their wage or bonus on a resume. So that's considered gauche, whereas you can put your title, for example, senior engineer, on your resume, right, and therefore increase your social status.
So which firms do this? Do we know?
So I believe Microsoft and Google, they all have these types of dual career ladders.
Right. So twin tracks, people who are good in the technical domain, people who are good at managing. How are the managers, the people with management potential, identified?
So there is an increasing trend for people to be just trained in management and to be trained as general skills. So often managers can even come from a different industry, but they are trained in general managerial skills.
Right. And gradually, I suppose, what you ask them to do is take on larger teams and see how they go.
Yes. And if I can add, it does seem like the firms that tend to promote managers not based upon current job performance, those are the firms where they let the managers manage very large teams because they've carefully chosen the manager to suit that managerial job role.
Right. This is about having a structure in place that separates, I suppose, something like engineering or sales from managing the engineering and sales.
Yes.
It's still not most companies, is it? Most companies don't do this, do they?
I believe there is an increasing trend in which the managerial labor market is now more broad and lots of managers come from a different firm or potentially a different industry.
What other processes can be put in place that will kind of help facilitate this?
Lots of consulting firms are now also grooming their employees for management. So even though they're promoting their top performers internally, they rotate these people across different divisions. So they get that managerial training before they're moved into a senior level position.
I'm thinking you probably need a good performance management system in place to facilitate this, to identify the talent and to make sure that you run it properly?
Absolutely. So good, unbiased record keeping would definitely help.
Am I right in thinking, though, Kelly, that sales, so the area that you identified, has got to be one of the worst, that in fact they have a long way to go in terms of being able to address this problem?
So I don't want to be too critical of the companies that employ sales workers. They seem to have come to a second best solution. So I wouldn't say that they have the wrong set of promotion policies. They could be willing to take the cost of not having the best managers because they want a promotion system in place that really motivates their workers to get the highest sales numbers possible. So it's a cost-benefit analysis that they've perhaps thought through. So having this kind of competitive promotion scheme in place does increase sales numbers.
I work in the media, I work in broadcasting, and we definitely follow the Peter Principle. A lot of the best journalists and producers and broadcasters become managers. It's not always very successful. I have to ask you about the academic world. What's happening over there?
We have a somewhat similar problem. The best professor is not necessarily the best dean of a business school. And to some extent, there is still this idea that the dean should be a very well-respected professor. So there's a little bit of this problem also within academia.
All right. I don't think either of us should say any more than that, Kelly. Thank you very much for joining me today.
Thank you.
Kelly Hsu is a professor of finance in the Yale School of Management. And that's Best Practice this week. The program is produced by Madhuta Dias. Our sound engineer is Amrita Betancourt. I'm Richard Adie.